There's a hand out for my bit. Why didn't you grab that open? Let me pray quickly. Father, help us to understand the ministry context in which we're in, and to understand it perhaps from a sort of a temporal perspective as we think about the idea of the rhythms and the shapes of a year. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen.
Okay, I do want us to think about the issue of rhythm within a year, because I think it's going to help us manage our energy. I think it's going to improve the experience of being in our church plant for members of our congregation. And I actually think it's going to inform our planning. When you step back and you think about it, a year has a tempo or a pulse. Now, obviously, that's been completely blown out of the water by the last 15 months. But ordinarily, a year does have a tempo or a pulse to it. It's a little bit like a concertina. There are times of compression and pressure and angst and busyness. And there are times to breathe, times of expansion and ease. There are times we know within a year when it's full on, and there are times when it's laid back. And I think recognizing that will help us make good calls about what to do and when to do it. Now, it's worth saying, I don't think it's a one size fits all rhythm that is the same for each one of us. So in other words, I'm not about to give you the blueprint on the rhythm in London. There is too much variety on the screen, both in terms of our personal circumstances and, of course, in terms of our context, which I'll come to. And I don't necessarily think that there is the same shape to the year for each one of us for the following three reasons. First of all, your context has a rhythm to the year. For example, in the UK, the year begins twice. First in January, but properly, I would suggest, in September. So we're not like Australia. I don't think we're like South Africa, John. It's different in the UK. For most of us, the beginning of the school year is the beginning of the year, even if we're not in education and we don't really know anyone in education. I just think that's the way it works. In London, August, Christmas, Easter are weird times because lots of people leave the city. And yet it's not everyone that leaves the city. August is a dead time for families, but not really for 20 and 30 something workers who probably took their summer holiday back in June or July or are waiting until September before they go away when it's cheaper. And the minority ethnic groups that call London their home tend not to go away much at all, except when the flights are cheap and the weather in the UK is awful and they'll go back to their original home to see family. So we need to be familiar, I think, with the rhythm of the year. Not only in our own context, though that matters, but also amongst those we're seeking to reach. Secondly, your church has a rhythm to the year. Now, whether your church is in existence yet or it's coming into being, the truth is the church in London, there is a kind of rhythm to the year. It has Christmas, which is a big thing, or at least I want to say the carol services are a big thing. It has Easter, which may be big, or it may be a bit of a damp squib, but it's there. New Year's Eve is huge if you have African heritage. For some, Pentecost is a big thing. You may have people in your church planting team who are expecting and celebrating things at various times of the year because they're associated with a biblical event or whatever. It may well be, for example, that Revive is a thing in people's minds if they remember it, the Commission Bible Festival that happens in June. But it's more complex than simply your church having a rhythm to the year, because your church actually has multiple rhythms to the year, because your church is made up of different people. So, for example, the children's ministry has its own rhythm because of things like Holiday Bible Club and summer camps if you do those. Your student work, if you have that, has a rhythm with its shorter terms. And in truth, everything being done by June and people disappearing for 3 months in the summer. Your 20s and 30s, if you have those, has another rhythm because, well, as I've said, they rarely go away in August. Now, in one sense, this is the sole thing that I want to get across. you need to know the rhythm of your year and the reason for the rhythm of your year, because that is the backdrop against which you're running church. You're managing your church family. There is a rhythm to the year. It is the sort of the temporal context in which you do ministry. And I want to encourage you to think about your year and to do so with others, to try and work out what's going on, given our circumstances, our context, our church, and so on. Now, when it comes to planning our church year, which I suspect many of us are doing at the moment, we're trying to put into place programs, events, and we need to work with, or we need to work out what the rhythm of the year is, and then I think not fight against it. So if it's a downtime in the rhythm, we may find it really hard to make stuff happen. For example, I would say in a family's congregation, it's pretty hard to make stuff happen in August, which is hard, isn't it? Because, you know, it looks like there's space in the schedule. Nothing's happening. Nothing's going on. We've closed down small groups, perhaps. But the truth is, no one's expecting activity. And you've got to kind of work against that to make stuff happen. So I want to suggest there are three things you could do. I'll give you some of my thinking on this. First of all, work out the events in the year, the events. So when are celebrations like Christmas and Easter? Obviously, Christmas, easy to predict, Easter less so. But when are the bank holidays? The holidays like the May bank holidays and the summer holiday. But go beyond that and say, in terms of events, what are the cultural events? Like, for example, this will give you an indication of my culture, Wimbledon, the Euros, the Olympics, when are exams? If you're around families with school age kids, when are the GCSEs? When are the A-levels? When are the mocks? When is the revision period? When is it done and dusted? So work out the events in the year. Just look at the year and just say, what is happening to my guys in our context? What are the big things? Just put those in. Secondly, work out the shape to the year. So are you talking about three school terms? Or is there some other structure that divides there? What is the shape to the year? I think it's different, for example, in Cape Town. I think it's different in the States. But there is a shape to our year, which sort of starts in September and finishes in July, and with stuff that happens in between. But so work out the shape of your year. Thirdly, work out the feel of the year. In other words, what are the pressure points? When is everyone expecting things to be busy? When are they okay with that? When are they fearful of it? In other words, I don't think anyone is massively exercised by the fact that September is busy. I actually think we need to take a half-term holiday in October, because those 6 weeks of getting church up and running are absolutely exhausting, but everyone's okay with it, but you need to take a break. When is the downtime? I suggested August. Christmas, New Year, dead time. When is it dark and cold? When is the weather better? The evening's light? What is that? Affects the feel of it, doesn't it? When are people available? When are they not? When is there an appetite for community in the course of a year? When is there an openness or a permission to address spiritual things? Work out the feel of the year. So, for example, I would say before Christmas, I actually think you're allowed to go around and knock on people's doors and say, hey, carol services, do you want to come? And no one gives you a hard time for that. But if you're doing it, you know, during barbecue season, and, you know, you're interrupting people, they'll still be pleasant, I would imagine. But it's like, why are you doing this now? So just work out the feel of the year. Now, I think those are key questions that will help you identify the rhythm of the year where you are. Now, what I thought I'd do is I'd just give you my thinking that goes into understanding and then designing the year. A lot of that is going to be informed by my experience in Balham, which is worth saying is a postgraduate university campus. It is full of 20-somethings, families who stay with young children, and it's pretty wealthy, pretty middle class, pretty white. It wasn't always, but is at the moment. I'm not there any longer. I stopped being there in 2017. But I think you know, I'll give you my thinking. Okay, so look, I think the September to August shape of the year is divided into three terms: autumn, spring, and summer. I think that breaks it up, gives you some helpful building blocks. It also gives you three periods that actually have their own rhythm to them as well, a rhythm within them. Now, inserted into that three-term shape, it's Christmas and Easter and August. Those are the downtime, the down periods when little happens. September, beginning of the year, everyone is familiar with the need to address the sluggishness of August. Everyone knows you've got to get up and running again, even if they don't like it. I think the August bank holiday usually signals the end of the holidays and a return to work and school. And everyone gets that it's a time of preparation. They're going into WH Smith, they're buying their new pencil cases. And the truth is there's some excitement about getting back. You know, if it's been a good holiday, everyone's done, and people feel okay about that. Christmas, hard stop, it's the year end. Everything winds down after Christmas. And to be honest, I think it normally winds down a couple of weeks prior to that. So for example, at Balham, Christmas Day was our worst attended Sunday in the year because no one was in Balham around that time, although few were, because most were going back to their parents where they knew they'd get a better Christmas Day experience. January, it's a new year, it's a new start. I think people still think in terms of doing away with the old and starting afresh. September and January, I think, are the two occasions in the year where we would expect and receive newcomers. Because in August, Balham is an area where people are new graduates and medical students were moving in. And January was a new start, a time to try something new. You know, there's been a frustration with the autumn version of yourself, the new year, new you, etc., new start. Easter, I think, is an odd one. It's a break and a four-day weekend. It is a major religious festival, except that lots of people aren't there. They just go away. I mean, why wouldn't you? It's a four-day weekend. I think half terms and bank holidays are worth identifying because those Sundays are often just a bit lame. I mean, it's great to meet people, but, you know, don't put the key sermon on a bank holiday or a half term weekend. So for me, if you have to choose one half term Sunday to carry on your program, choose the second one, not the first, because the first people will be away. The second one, they may well be back. But usually I just break the series for 2 weeks and just do something different. Now, the understanding of the rhythm of the year is the context into which I'm going to put and overlay my church program. And I'm working on the assumption it's easier to work with the rhythm rather than against the rhythm. And I'm assuming that I can't go full out all of the time. And therefore, to work with the periods of intensity and the lack of intensity makes some sense. And to be honest, just operating at the same level and trying to sort of sustain an acceptable level, I just think it's boring and uninspiring. I think it's worth having those kind of ups and downs in a church year. Now, as I look at that program of the year, I've then obviously, together with a planning team, I'm wanting to ask some questions like, for example, what are the big church events, the kind of the non-negotiable big things that have to happen? We don't have to have events. You don't have to run church that way. I wonder whether post-COVID, we just decide we're going to get rid of absolutely everything that we used to do before that could be described as an event. It's up to you. It's your call. Only do your events and only put events back in that you think will help fulfill your mission because they're resource sucking. So only put them in if you think what it leads to is ministry multiplication. If not, think hard about that. But here are some things I think that are worth thinking about in those kind of big event things. When are the co-mission events? If you're part of the co-mission network of church, if you're part of the FIC, if you're part of a network or a denomination, when are the big events? So for us in commission, that would be when's Revive, the Bible Festival. I think it's a low effort win for a church plant because you get to provide a church weekend away within a much bigger festival where all the heavy lifting is done for you by the network. Brilliant. When is Commission Sunday? Because that's an opportunity at the beginning of January to change things up a bit. Okay. When could you go away as a church? Do you want to go away as a church? Would that be a good thing to do? Why would you be doing it? Is it affordable? Is it weather dependent? When would you put a church weekend away? When are summer camps? When you might want to send your 20s to resource them or send your kids to benefit from them? When are summer camps? Are we doing a week of mission? Are we doing a month of special events? Is there any cause to do that? Should we try and position big invitational events? I think one of the critical things is, when do you do your carol services? How many are you going to do, and when are you going to do it? You're going to put all your eggs in one basket. When is that going to be? Which is the Sunday you choose? Lots will depend on your context. Do you want to launch the year with a special day like Cornerstone and Kingston, who have an event where they go away early in September? Okay, those are the big events. Secondly, what are the regular meetings? Now, this is a bit boring, a bit mundane, but you've just got to put it in because they're there. So you've got your year planner. When is the church prayer meeting? Are you doing it monthly? Is it down? Is that a Sunday? Is it a Wednesday night when you're cancelling small groups? You know, when are you doing that? When are your church family meetings, if you're doing those? In other words, are you doing a Sunday, are you doing a church lunch with information? When are those going to go in? When are the elders meetings? How frequently are you going to do those? When are the small group leaders prep evenings? Are you going to do those termly, monthly, weekly? When are your regular meetings? You've got to stick those in. Thirdly, what are the key programming questions? So you've got to say, okay, what do I want to preach? And when would be good to do it? I think, unquestionably, you accomplish more in ministry terms in the autumn term than at any other time in the year. So I think you want the thing you want to preach on, you want to do it in September, October, November. That's the critical time, I think. Are you going to have a week of prayer? Would that be something that you would want to do, perhaps in the run-up to your mission week? When do you promote, recruit and launch small group involvement? Do you write off September while you wait for people to arrive before putting them into groups? Do you cancel your groups in the summer? Is August basically a holiday from being a Christian? When are the times to train leaders? So do you start the year with a leader's prep day or a weekend away? Just worth thinking about that. You know, your small group leaders, for example. Is there an elders day in the year, each term, for you guys to get away, to pray together and plan together? When do you think are the key times to train the congregation? Both in terms of the shape of the year, but also perhaps within a week. It's worth remembering, isn't it, the week has a shape to it as well. The beginning of the week is normally better than the end of the week. Monday night, people are up for meetings. Friday nights, it's hard. Wednesday is kind of, it's middle, isn't it? It's the middle of the week. Saturday morning might be a time to do something, but you're up against other things. You've got to ask those questions as well. I wonder whether Lent gives us an excuse to try something different. It's often an unused space because most of us aren't religious, Lent is a kind of, perhaps. Is January a time to purge the system? I mean, dry January attempts to address an assumed excess of alcoholic intake. Is that a time, for example, for a media fast to replace screen time with Bible time to start out the year the way you'd like to go on? Is September a time to gather the congregation together and go away? Or do you miss out on actually welcoming newcomers who've arrived? Those are some of the key programming questions. Timing questions would be, when is the best time to raise the issue of financial giving? When in the year would you want to do that? How regularly would you want to do that? You're probably having to make key staffing decisions if those are a thing for you in the spring term, and you're probably needing to raise that money and be certain of that money by Easter. So that'll help you in terms of timing. Worth asking, isn't it, is when is a good time to provide an evangelistic or a pre-evangelistic course? Is it September? And then again in the new year off the back of Christmas? Is it even worth trying to do anything in the summer? When is the best time for a carol service? I've covered that. When would we run if we wanted to a holiday Bible club? Now, look, all of this is to say there is a rhythm to the year. You've got to make some key decisions and decide what goes when. And why would we put it there? And then ask the question, what's it going to feel like being there? And I wonder whether it's worth, once you've got it in place, just actually play out the year in practice for a variety of people. So think of people in your congregation, maybe the single mum, maybe the single guy, the student, the teenager, the family. Just ask yourself, what will their experience of the church program be like? What are the pressure points for them? When's it going to be demanding? When is it going to be easy? When is it going to be exciting? When is it going to be difficult? And just to, you know, get your head around all of that and what it will feel like. Now, look, that kind of planning can be overwhelming. I think it's worth doing it with others. Get a team of people. Particularly get variety on your team, particularly as you map the church year. And there is, I think, value in the church itself understanding that there is a shape and a rhythm to the year. And it just helps in terms of expectations, doesn't it? I mean, the truth is, we need to encourage people to take time off, to replenish, so they can come back in September ready to fire on all cylinders. But if they think we require them to sort of be up here throughout August, when you press the accelerator in September, there's nothing that's going to come out, just fumes. So yeah, there you go. Don't know what you think. Comments, queries, questions, observations. Some of you guys have been doing this for a while. What have I forgotten? What have I missed? John?
Perks, I was thinking one event that I found in when we were at church in Reading, putting baptisms, so saying we're going to have a baptism here, come and speak to me if this is something that you're thinking about, or you know, or maybe you've just finished a, and so that would tie into maybe when you're doing your Christianity Explored, you're praying that people become Christians through that, and then you know, a month later or something, you have a opportunity. I don't know, but yeah, just planning in baptisms really into helpful. The rhythm, it causes you to pray, and it also just puts it on people's radar. So we did that, and we've got five youth who said they'd like to be baptized, and so they've been through baptismal classes, and we're doing that in a few weeks' time. But there might be others in the congregation, you know, who've been sat there for years thinking, oh, I'd like to get baptized, but how do I go about that? And just kind of, yeah, regularly putting that on people's radar.
Yeah, brilliant. Thanks, John. Helpful.
Hey, I wonder if things stay on track with the releasing of COVID restrictions, how anybody's considering Zoom or other online gatherings into the autumn rhythms.
Others? Daniel, it's your question. Will people here be running stuff in parallel, or how will they use Zoom going forward?
The first.
Anyone?
Well, I think for us on Sunday, we've soft launched, so we're encouraging people to come into the building. And you know, last few weeks, no one was really on Zoom. I think the question is, if we do something when we formally launch online as well, why are we doing it? And my only reason to live stream something would be to get it out there to the unchurched, not the church, because we want people to gather physically. And I think midweek as well, we're just at a stage of splitting into groups. And we want people to attend in groups, not on Zoom. So it's our current thinking. It may change next week.
We're thinking of canning our live stream for a few weeks at least, just for the last few who aren't coming. And also just for the couple of lame excuses I've had. A couple of Sundays. Oh, yeah, no, we're not coming this week because we've got people for lunch and I want to clean the garden, and we'll watch it online. No, that's not how it works. So we might just can it for a little while just to let people know that, you know, that's not, well, maybe permanently, but and then just have a we'd record it and put it up later. But
good stuff. Thank you.
That would be my question from this, Perks, in reflection on what you've just said. I think the so many so helpful comments about different things that are going on throughout the year and things you might want to like factor in. My question would be, how much do they influence? What's the difference between what your expectations for your church family and what's your expectations for unbelievers who you're trying to reach? Because in my mind, I think the Euro football competition, I would want to have an understanding of that and the timings for that if I was wanting to speak to people on the doors. So I'm not going to turn up when England are playing their match. But I wouldn't necessarily change my church service timing, because I'm saying that that's a God that is more important than the true God.
Yeah. So I'm not giving you answers.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm saying to you,
ask the questions. Yeah.
Do what you've done already.
Yeah. Yeah.
In other words, you know when the Euros are, because you know I'm not going to go door knocking then. Brilliant. There you go. Brilliant. In other words, you're working with the rhythms of your context, not against them. I think you're right on church meetings. Though it's always worth, I think, potentially leveraging those. So, for example, I have no idea what the Euro dates are at the moment. I know it starts, I think England are playing on Sunday. But, if for example, you have an evening congregation and it clashes with England's, the England semi-final, what do you do? Well, you do church. You carry on doing church. You get someone to video it or record it, whatever it's called these days, and you watch it together as a church family afterwards. Or you invite people to it. In other words, it's you don't have to do that, but you could. It's just worth it. Work with the reality, and make decisions informed about the reality, the sort of the temporal reality of people's lives, rather than just I think just unaware of those things. I think an informed decision making is usually better. I think that's what I'm encouraging you guys to do.
But the example I've had recently of that is Mother's Day. So people in our church just don't turn up to church on Mother's Day. And it infuriates me. I'm just like, the whole weekend you could see your mum. She's important on a Saturday as well as a Sunday.
But making decisions out of a place of infuriation normally isn't the best place to make decisions from. But I get what you mean. But again, that's the reality. Okay, what are you going to do with that? As an eldership, what do we do? Do we challenge their idolatry? Do we call people to account? Or, what are we going to do here? Are we going to work with that? Do we make that Sunday? Do we can the preaching program for 1 week only to extol the value of mothers? Do we have an element in our church meeting? Whatever your decision you made, is at least made against the awareness of that's a thing for us.
That would be my question is how much do we make church a consumer thing where we basically pander to all of our idolatries?
Yeah.
How much do we, I'm aware of these things, but mainly from the purpose of reaching non-Christians, because, at the end of the day, I can't expect them to not want to do those things, and that's exactly what they want to be doing at different times of the year. And I think it might be.
And I'm not going to make that decision for you. I think I'm saying, you cannot make that decision if you remain unaware of the rhythms of what are actually taking place around you.
Folks, I'd love to hear. This is probably a more lengthy one, and I know we've done stuff on meetings, but I'd love to hear a bit more on what a planning meeting looks like. I imagine that's quite an overwhelming meeting I guess you get into habits, don't you? But if you're starting from afresh, you've got a kind of blank slate to work from, and then there were quite a few things on there. And I guess the big thing is to think, what resources do you have? There's going to be stuff on that list you're going to say, actually, we're just not going to be able to do that because we don't have the people. But I'd love to hear a bit more about that. Probably not now, but another time.
Okay. We can cover that. Absolutely. Jimmy, last contribution. Say something helpful.
Just say a word about meeting all together as a church versus in home groups. A lot of us are encouraging people in home groups, particularly the newer plant. Is it also helpful to have a regular, okay, yeah, instead of meeting out in home groups, let's meet all together. Say a little bit about that, please, someone.
Do you mean on midweek all together as a church family?
Midweek.
Yeah. It's worth saying when Richard Cokin came to Dundonald, one of the things he realised was in order to reach the 20-somethings who were living in Wimbledon and commuting up to town, he reckoned one thing he had to do was provide a social grouping for them. So he took them out of home groups, which, to be honest, were pretty lame and pretty, you know, not great Bible teaching. And there were lots of great things about them, but he wanted to sharpen up the 20-somethings. So he essentially just copied, I think, what St. Helens had done with RML. So we had this thing called Knowing God. It was Wednesday night. We were all in together in one big building, but then we divided into our small groups. In other words, there was a group, we all got together, big hubbub, Danish pastries, coffees, etc. Then you subdivided into your groups. Sometimes there was an introductory talk from the front, but then you did stuff in your small groups, and then the evening finished. And because we were all in our 20s, well, we go to the pub for an hour at the end, or not. But there was the opportunity to do that. And that happened every week. So that's one thing that's worth thinking through. Do you want to separate off your 20-somethings for the benefits you get of both attraction and the training opportunities, but you impoverish them in that they lose some of that intergenerational contact? I think, you know, that I'm not sure. Others?
I think bottom line, know your context and know the rhythms of, because what it looks like we're in one context will be different to another. And I think that's what we're trying to, we've lost a little bit of, you know, like, as we all have, social relational capital, in the sense of, you know, COVID has just made it very difficult to, but it's just working out what in our communities, what are the rhythms of life? Because of that diversity thing in London. So it's just knowing that and then working out how you best serve in that context.
Just to address John's question, how flexible should we be with our rhythm, i.e. COVID lockdowns, etc. So he's on a back, okay, they've got a power cut in Cape Town with backup battery. Well, I think, John, I mean, your own comment there illustrates the difficulty that you guys face in your context. Know your context. Your context is one in which, you know, you may lose Zoom because you're on a backup battery and there are power cuts. I mean, if COVID has taught us in the West anything, it's we are not masters of our own destiny. We cannot guarantee anything. We can't, you know, there was that week about a year ago where Zoom went down on a Sunday morning and a whole load of church services just couldn't happen. So it's part of the exhaustion, isn't it, of planning in the midst of a realized uncertainty. So I think we need to be, in one sense, what do I do? So I plan like we live in the world of Proverbs, where there is an assumed preservation of the order of Genesis 1 and 2. But I expect, like I live in the world of Ecclesiastes, where there is disorder that is brought about into creation as a result of the fall. So you plan proactively, predicting order, but in one sense you manage your expectations, which is, do you know what, this could go pear-shaped at any time, and you get it that way round, and then you can react to what goes on. So I think it's good stewardship, isn't it, of time and resources to plan. I think it comes under this, you know, we don't want to be wasteful of the opportunities the Lord gives to us. Therefore, we'll put a bit of energy into thinking what will happen, but we know it's not guaranteed.